Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 29.
Tamevan vapidiyante.
Tamevan vapidiyante.
Loka bhur adayastvayaha.
Loka bhur adayastvayaha.
Dishayam anuvrittayam.
Dishayam anuvrittayam.
Nirmukta shashibhaskaram.
Nirmukta shashibhaskaram.
Tamevan vapidiyante.
Tamevan vapidiyante.
Loka bhur adayastrayaha.
Loka bhur adayastrayaha.
Nishayam anuvrittayam.
Nishayam anuvrittayam.
Nirmukta shashibhaskaram.
Nirmukta shashibhaskaram.
Tom,
that.
Eva, certainly.
Certainly.
Anu,
after.
Apidiyante, are out of sight.
Are out of sight.
Lokaha, the planets. Buh adayaha, the three worlds, Bhur, Bhuvah, and Swaha.
The three worlds, Bhur, Bhuvah, and Swaha.
Trayaha,
three.
Nishayam, in the night.
Anuvrittayam,
ordinary.
Nirmukta,
without glare.
Shashi,
the moon.
Bhaskaram,
the sun. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When the night of Brahma ensues, all the three worlds are out of sight, and the sun and the moon are without glare, just as in the due course of an ordinary night. Purport. It is understood that the glare of the sun and the moon disappear from the sphere of the three worlds, but the sun and the moon themselves do not vanish. They appear in the remaining portions of the universe, which is beyond the sphere of the three worlds. The portion in dissolution remains without sun rays or moon glow. It all remains dark and full of water, and there are indefatigable winds, as explained in the following verses. Anyway, it's no place that's fit for inhabitation. Everyone has died. No matter what's going on, there's nobody there to see it. The sun and the moon persist, apparently, for the duration of the universe. They're not destroyed at the end of Brahma's day. There's very often someone vows that such and such, well, is the fame of so and so will remain as long as the sun and the moon shine. Arkam Achandram. As long as the sun and the moon remain, the fame of so and so will also be alive. Well, this puts more strength into that vow, that this is for the entire duration of the universe, that the sun and the moon remain. Life depends on the radiance of the sun. That's recognized by modern science also. It's not just a radiator, not just that we need some heat, but where do we get energy from? We need power, just like you need electric power to work your appliances. Okay. But there's a more basic power. Where does that electric power come from? Okay, we burn diesel fuel and
electric generator creates the electric power.
Well, where did the energy in the diesel fuel come from? Well, it came from these little, whatever it is, fossils, dead animals, that were buried under the ground under great pressure for a long time. They turned into petroleum. Well, where did these little animals, snails or whatever they were, where did they get their energy from? Well, they ate some other creatures. And it goes back and back and back, you know, trace back the sources of the energy. Ultimately, it comes from the sun. Animals live, I mean, you learned this in sixth grade biology. Yeah. The animals live by eating plants. Some animals live by eating plants, and other animals eat those animals. Where do the plants get the light, their energy from? From the sun. By photosynthesis, they create their own energy, their own bodies, out of sunlight. So in a very real scientific way, all life, all energy for life, and energy for everything else in the world, comes from the radiance of the sun. Yachakshuri Savitar Sakala Grahanam. Savita, the sun, is the king of all the planets. Of all the ruling forces, all the forces that rule our life, the sun is the king, the most powerful, the most primary. And he represents the eye of Krishna. The moon is his other eye. But therefore we worship the sun in our Gayatri Mantra, although it's actually worship of Surya Narayan, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the imagery of him being the sun. But more basically, looking at it as that Savitur, Varenyam Bhargo Devasya, Savita means the inspirer of life. So in a secondary way, the sun is the inspirer of life. He's giving the energy for everybody. And the light. And the water. How is the water distributed? How does it come from the oceans back up into the clouds and then rain down on the fertile land? By the evaporation power of the sun. Again, sun. All water is under the control of a different demigod, but the distribution of water that makes life possible. If the water is all sitting in the ocean, then it's not going to be much use for people who are trying to live on the land. But it's distributed by the power of the sun. That is designated by the term Savita, the one who impels, who gives the power of life. So that, in a superficial sense, is the glorification of the sun, God. But who is the real Savita? Okay, we just look up in our dictionary and it says, okay, Savita is the name of the sun. And with our black and white, linear way of thinking, that's it, period. It means the sun. But no, it's not all black and white. It's not all only one meaning for everything. Savita, taking the meaning of the word, the literal meaning of the word, who is the ultimate inspirer? The personality of Godhead. When we worship the sun as the giver of life, we should understand we're worshiping the actual giver of life, the ultimate giver of life. Where did the sun get his energy from? Yasyagya Brahmati Samvrita Kala Chakra. By the order of Govinda, the sun is rotating in his orbit, traveling in his orbit. Mounting the wheel of time. That's the translation? And elsewhere, what does it say? Madvayat vativato yam. Suryas tapati madvayat. What does it do? Varshatindro tahatyagnir. Vichus choradid madvayat. This is actually spoken by Kapiladev, who we don't think of as a very fearsome form of the Lord. But speaking on behalf of all the incarnations,
Because Peleliu is just a sage, although he can be fearsome. When the sons of Sagara Maharaj crossed his path, he burned them to ashes just by his angry glance. So yes, this is the terrible personality of Godhead. And he says, Madbayat, out of fear of me the wind blows. And the sun radiates his heat and light out of fear of me. Indra pours down his rains out of fear of me. And fire burns out of fear of me. And death is wandering the face of the earth looking for victims out of fear of me. So we're afraid of these forces. The wind can come and blow our house down. If you live in a place where they have hurricanes, you can be afraid of the wind. Bengal, the wind can be very fierce. Even without even ordinary weather, any day there can be a storm that can blow, maybe not blow your house down, but can blow down a pandal. Can knock your windows in. The wind is fearsome. The sun is fearsome. Anyone who wants to stay for another month here will find out how fearsome the sun can be. Suryas Charati. Suryas Tapati. What does the sun do that's scary? He burns. The sun can be very hot, right? And so much rain can come. Indra tried to destroy Vrindavan just by pouring down too much rain. And sometimes he does destroy some places. Fire. Fire can destroy cities, whole cities. Even without the atomic bomb, although it was in the works, we used it in the last 2 weeks of the war. I guess Japan, we used that atomic bomb twice. But more people were killed before that, in the months before that, in Germany and in Japan, by ordinary phosphorus bombs that created firestorms that burned down whole cities. Dresden, 250,000 people burned to death.
Phosphorus was like anti-personnel. You got an ash and it landed on your arms.
Yes.
It just would burrow right in through all the tissues. The fire wouldn't go out because of your fat. Right,
Hare Krishna.
This is what's going on.
Yes, they're still doing it.
Where?
You don't need atomic bombs to destroy cities. It was done very successfully with these simple phosphorus bombs. And then the fire in the city gets so great, you get this natural phenomenon of a firestorm. And then nothing can stop it. You can't escape it. Of course, Hanuman did that to Lanka. Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra and burned down Kashi. So it's not a new thing. This is the power of fire. Very scary. Everybody should be afraid of fire. Only a very immature and foolish person is going to be willing to put his finger in the fire. And death. People don't want to think about death. They're so afraid of it. But who is the real fearsome person behind? Where is the source of all this fearfulness, fearsomeness? That's Govinda. Virtuous Charity Madhvayat. They're all doing their horrible work out of fear, because they're afraid of Krishna. That's the power of the sun and these other forces of nature, because it's the power of Krishna. Of course, if we become Krishna's friends, he's not going to use his power against us. Then when some stupid jackass demon or someone else comes to disturb Krishna's play, coward boys have nothing to be afraid of. Even a forest fire comes. Don't worry. Just close your eyes. I'll swallow it. So better to be on Krishna's side than on the side of the demons. Krishna will use his power to destroy the demons and protect the devotees. so you can have all protection. Krishna will use his power to protect you if you just don't remain on his side. Okay, so any questions or comments?
Brahma came and picked Bhumi out of the water. How did Bhumi get down there?
It's not specified in the text. Tribal Ramada says that it was sort of out of negligence that the earth was allowed to fall into the Rasatala region, the Garbhodaka Ocean. The Prabhupada says in the purport it was because of exploitation of petroleum, right? Wasn't it? Gold rush, or gold?
It wasn't Ravana that was drilling for gold or something.
I don't think it was mentioned about Hiranyakashipu. Yeah, but this must have been earlier because this is before the reign of Hiranyakashipu. This was his older brother,
Hiranyakashipu. What would they do with petroleum? They didn't have
the
term.
In the purport, Prabhupada mentioned that it's nowadays something like the wind.
But he didn't say that was the reason back then why the earth fell into the ocean. Yeah, you can look at the purport there. Prabhupada says something. Yeah, something about also about gold, exploiting gold. Anyway, exploitation of minerals, gold or petroleum, is what caused the imbalance of the earth that it fell into the ocean. Just like we want to go to the moon, you know, and exploit the minerals. We're not thinking maybe somebody lives there. So before the earth was inhabited, before it was inhabited, I guess the higher planets were just using it as a you know, a mining center. They were just taking resources from the earth, and therefore things were disrupted. The balance, gravitational balance of the earth was disturbed, and it fell down.
But it had to be saved because it's so important to spiritual advancement.
Yes, human beings are needed. Demigods depend on human beings to perform sacrifice. Demigods perform sacrifice for each other, but they're not really into it. You know, they don't have to perform sacrifice so much. The human beings are the ones who depend on sacrifice for their prosperity. So the demigods depend on their prime customers, the human beings. So human beings had to be set up. Manu was supposed to provide the places of habitation for the human beings and also, you know, generate the population of human beings. First of all, he said, well, look, I'm supposed to populate the earth, but the earth is down at the bottom of the ocean. It has to be brought up and recovered. Otherwise, I can't develop the human race. So for that purpose, it was needed. And Manu talks about that. He will talk about that. Chapter whatever, 17 or something coming up. Okay, 16 maybe. 17. Anything else?
I'd just like to share just a little tiny realization that I had in Boston, actually, a few years ago, that it was like the first day of spring, and it was the first warm day. And I noticed that the people in general were, like, very, very, like, in a good mood, you know. They were all taking their jackets off, and they were just enjoying the fact that the sun was giving them enough warmth. And so and then I was looking, as an aspiring Vaishnava, I was looking in the sky. And to me, the amazing thing was that there was this, you know, whatever the dimensions or whatever, but this huge disc of fire is floating in the sky. And just a magnificent outpouring of light and heat and energy. And I just felt very fortunate that, to me, instead of like worshiping the sun, like sun worshippers, like they go to the Caribbean or something and worship the sun because it's nice for my sense gratification, that I was feeling some awe and reverence for the sun, even without even considering like that there's personality, that the sun got, just the fact that there's this phenomenon that's so gigantic and we're so tiny compared to it. And I felt fortunate because I felt for that moment I wasn't sharing the ignorance of the masses, you know, that they were just taking it for granted. And I was saying, I felt like tapping them on the shoulder and saying, you know,
Isn't it amazing? Isn't this amazing that this is huge, whatever you want to call it, or him or what, you know, in the sky like that? I just had just a quick question, just like in developing our Krishna consciousness and trying to accept the Vedic version of things, like now the stars are out again, the moon's not so bright, the stars are shining forth very... I heard that Jayapataka Maharaj actually has a good telescope he keeps in Mayapur just to take a look at the stars. So anyway, I look at the stars and I immediately, you know, like go into my default Western mode. It's unfortunate that my default mode is Western, you know. So I'm thinking, you know, how many light years away would this star? And it must be like more powerful than our sun. And I'm just thinking the way that I was taught that these are actually all suns and that they're very, very far away and very powerful. Now, is that like another valid frame of reference and it's okay to think like that? Or is it better for trying to become a Vedantist to check myself when I think like that and preach to my mind and say, no, these are actually much closer, and they're all that light that you see, they're actually reflecting our sun. That's the only sun in the whole universe, and all these other points are just reflecting the sun of, you know, the light of the sun. The sun. Our sun is the sun. There's no other sun. Now, so should I try to, if you pardon the expression, reprogram myself to think like that? Or is it okay, is like that another frame of reference and that there's another dimension or something where it's okay to think in the Western way?
Well, I mean, according to our Siddhanta, it's not correct. So, technically speaking, no, it's not, you know, you should give up mistaken ideas and to cultivate the correct ideas. But, you know, sometimes it's not easy to do. And what difference would it make in your real life anyway, whether the sun, the stars are 2 feet away or, you know, or billions of light years? So what? Who cares? So one thing is not to be too, you know, not to be so concerned about it. Yeah. As far as, you know, me and my spiritual life, or even my material life, how much does it matter exactly how far the stars are? And you know, it may not be exactly the way I'm thinking, but so what?
It would just be a natural development in the course of time that, besides accepting I'm not this body, then course of time I'll also see everything from Krishna's,
right,
the Vedic.
And you may not be provided information to prove the right point, the right theory. You know, you just may not have access to the information that actually, you know, cinches it. Krishna's withholding. You know, the knowledge, the insight would convince us. Of course it's like this, not like that. And so out of lack of information we're confused. So what can we do? We don't have the information. You know, I'd like to buy a house, but I only have a few hundred dollars. What can I do? You know. No sense beating my head against the wall. See if I can get some money. But until I have money, no sense being anxiety about buying a house I can't afford. Like that, I can't figure something out because I don't have the information. So what can I do?
One thing I did think, at least for a moment, was that either way, it's still wonderful and amazing. Either way, whether Krishna's creation, that they're extremely far and they're all independent suns, that's amazing. That's like wonderful to think about. And if they're not, if they're actually much closer, and they're all reflecting light of our sun, then we have a more like a universe family here. Everything's closer, and you know, it's kind of like, that's also amazing. It's also amazing that reality, even materially, may be so different from what they taught me in high school. So either way, at least I felt okay like that. It never gets boring. Let's put it like that.
Yes. I can't pretend that I completely understand this question, you know, the answer to how to answer this question about what the stars are and how far where they are. I just have, you know, the opinion of Srila Prabhupada, but all the
reasons to prove it. I don't know. Okay. Anything else?
They're not all just reflections of light from the sun, but some of them are actually effulgences of personalities or saintly persons or something. I heard some other description like that.
Yeah, when Arjun, when they go to the trying to recoup the sons of Devaki, is it? When they go on a chariot and Arjun and Krishna, I think, is it? And they go. Sariputta reads a whole passage from a Purana describing how the description, as you say, that they see the stars and they're like torches and they're places where the departed souls of Kshatriyas go to and it sounds very much like independent sons and that you can't see them so well from this planet, but they were going and they could see them very clearly. It sounded just like an astronomical journey or something in modern context.
Maybe they're independent sources of light, but I don't know if you say sun, so it's not supposed to be more than one sun. Sun is the primary source of light.
Okay. In the basic book, in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says like very clearly that, you know, by the way, there's a misconception. They're not suns. These stars are planets, and there's only one. We have them.
Prabhupada is intentionally being very bold, challenging. You know, you really want to surrender to Krishna? You want to claim to be a devotee of Krishna? Well, believe this or else.
Dakshi.
Yeah.
Dakshi, that's part of it.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.